This podcast
is shareable. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this either is or will become your favorite podcast. This is shareable. The show that's so good, you got to tell someone about it. Every episode, we explore the impact of people and technology on our lives and careers, and we send you away with something shareable. Now, without further ado, let's get to it.
Hello there, shareable listeners. It's been a while. You may recognize my voice from the end credits of our show, and if you're an old school listener, you'll remember me as Jeff's plucky co-host from season 2 and 3, but for our new listeners, I'm Caroline Tissone, shareable podcast producer and occasional co-host, currently on a podcasting sabbatical, but always supporting the show from the background. I was asked to jump in and record the intro for today's show, so I'll get right into it. Today, you're going to be listening to a conversation with Jeanette Brunet. She's a coach, a speaker, company culture consultant, and inspiration for all to begin actually achieving the coveted work-life balance. She's passionate about helping everyone perform at their best, have amazing careers, all through setting up a strong foundation in the practice of self-care. As usual, their conversation spans a wide variety of topics, but I wanted to share some of my favorites. Today, you're going to be listening to them reinterpret the idea of self-care in the 24-hour work week, how to incorporate meditation into your company culture, how to take control of your devices instead of letting them take control of you, how to avoid burnout, and how each of these ideas stem from focusing on building a stronger connection with your most powerful technology, your own body and mind. And I might add that this episode's a tearjerker, folks, so here's your emotional content warning. But seriously, Jeanette is truly incredible, and you're going to love this episode. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Shareable, everybody. I am here today with a very special guest. Every week is a special guest, but you know, I get excited every single time I have someone. And today you can't, as listeners, you can't see face-to-face, but I get to see my guest face-to-face. Jeanette, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Of course. So let's start out by asking the big question that helps you to be introduced to our audience, which is who are you and what are you most passionate about?
I want to start out by what I'm most passionate about. Because it has really shaped my life. And that is that we can perform at our best. We can have an amazing career. We can do all the things we love and not lose our health. And that is what I help leaders doing, to perform at their best, sustain their success, and not burn out. I'm a coach. I'm a speaker. I help companies. I consult with them to figure out how to change the work culture so that we can have a work culture where people not only care, but also feel cared for by taking better care of themselves in that sense. So
I love it. That's a technology that, that's a topic that is very near and dear to my heart that we talked a little bit about before we got on. I'm a huge fan of looking at leadership and how we can all be better leaders, how we can create amazing company cultures where people really enjoy coming to work. And I love bringing in the idea of physical, mental, emotional well-being into the place that we spend a vast majority of our life when we're not sleeping. I want to get to know a little bit more about your background and kind of what sort of person you are coming into this conversation. I want to ask you a little bit about technology and how you relate to it before we kind of dig deeper. But how would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 with your technology usage? 10 being that you get the ins and outs of ones and zeros and you're fully fluid and fluent in it. And a 1 being that you have trouble turning off your caps lock.
I'm pretty high up there. I'm probably somewhere between 8 and 10 in terms of being a geek. Mm-hmm. I was one of the first people with a Palm Pilot on the subway back in the day. And for me, technology always gave me a sense of freedom.
I love it.
So because it meant that I could take my work with me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it also makes sense now why you're in the business of talking about, you know, having emotional well-being and maybe disconnecting from technology a little bit. Would you consider yourself at the forefront then? So you said you were one of the first to have a Palm Pilot. So are you typically someone who adopts technology like as soon as it comes out and really gets to know it and tries to keep up and stay current or stay ahead of things?
I do, and yet I don't. I'm not on top of all the apps.
Okay.
So I'm not as much of an app person as I am a, I guess you can call it more of a hardware person, in the sense that I like to have my gadgets and I don't like to carry too much stuff.
And just understanding what's out there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like apps that help me work better and understand myself better. But I also think it's super important that we don't forget they can't take over from our self relationship.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love that perspective. So Shareable is a show where we talk about the impact that people and technology have on our lives and our careers. And those two forces, in my mind, are inescapable. What everybody that is a success in their life has been impacted by some other human being, probably lots and lots and lots of other human beings. A lot of people talk about their parents and the influence that they've had or particular bosses. And then at the same time, technology can be such a disruptive force. It can send us down a good path, a bad path. So I'm curious, given the type of work you do, especially, could you tell me about someone that changed your life and what they did that sent you down that path? And I know one of the stories about this from your TED talk, and I'm not sure if you're going to bring up that one, but I am curious what the first thing that comes to your mind is there.
The Dalai Lama.
Go deeper. Tell me about it.
You didn't expect that one, did you?
Didn't expect that one.
No, you know, I was a fashion and design person and a marketing person for a big part of my life. And when I got the big wake-up call of being told that it might be a matter of time before I got cancer, I was really setting out on a search to learn more about myself, learn more about what makes us healthy and what makes us unhealthy and how we can take charge of our health. And I found that mindfulness and changing that relationship with ourselves and really becoming friends with ourselves and our very own body is essential. And Buddhism, I studied Buddhism and I studied mindfulness and meditation for a long time and still do. But yeah, that's been part of my path and it's a big part of how I teach.
And you said the Dalai Lama, but I'm not sure. Were you saying that in jest or were you saying that kind of in a more general sense? Or was it something specifically that, you know, the Dalai Lama said in one of the many talks that he's given or things like that, that kind of set you on that perspective?
I started reading and I also been to a couple of events where he has been present and his simple presence was profound for me. And so there was a sense that I learned something about myself just by being in his presence.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Can we talk about mindfulness for a little bit? It's a sure. Recent interest of mine. Candidly, it is, I think I'd have to check my app, but I think it's day 15 of my streak and a total of maybe 30 days that I've been involved with this. I've been using a meditation app that I'm just a huge fan. I've been telling everybody should meditate. But it's kind of amazing because it was literally the first day that I meditated where I noticed the impact in my focus, in my energy, in my clarity, in my lack of anxiety. Not a very anxious person to begin with, but the ability to separate myself from my emotions in those moments using these kind of breathing techniques and focus has been transformative for me. You've been obviously doing it a lot longer, I think, than the 20 days that I've been in it, unless you just recently were hanging out with the Dalai Lama. But talk to me a little bit about the impact that mindfulness has had for you and how you kind of see it fitting into a fulfilling life.
Yeah. I've always been a fixer. I've always tried to fix other people's lives. It comes from growing up with a bipolar mother. And this idea that I was responsible and always thinking. And I learned to observe before I act. I learned to reflect more and I learned to observe my own thoughts. The other thing that always challenged me was fear. I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden one day I was just scared of everything. And that was when I was a kid. And it took me it's been taking me a long time to learn that I can use mindfulness to observe my thoughts in any situation and really shift. And as part of what I teach, when I talk about asking the right why, it's this self-talk that always gets us stuck. And instead, I call it, we can think forward instead. And I use the principles of mindfulness to do that because it's a way for us to pause and observe where we're headed with our thoughts. And it's also a really good time hack.
What do you mean by that? Say that part. Tell me what you mean by about the time hack part.
You get lost in thoughts so many times and you don't realize it until you spent, I don't know how much, thinking all those thoughts about what's not working. And if we can catch that a lot faster, that's part of mindfulness, right? It's like catching our actions much earlier.
Yeah.
And have a choice.
Yeah.
So for me, it's about that, right? It's about noticing where we're headed with our thoughts and then having a choice where we want to go with it instead.
Yeah, I love that. And it's interesting because now that you've explained it, I can kind of see the time hack here in a sense where just from an emotional standpoint, you save yourself all of the time and suffering that you spend in your thoughts, potentially dealing with an emotion that's completely unnecessary. I'll give you one of my examples that this is a routine Jeff Gibbard moment of spending too much time in thought and emotion. I have a real thing with Uber drivers where like, if I say, come and pick me up at this location and they're at the corner, I will be grouchy for like 15 minutes. And it honestly has only been in the last 3 weeks where I've been able to say, you know what, this really isn't that big of a deal. And do I want to spend this time in this emotion of being angry about something that is in the scheme of things so inconsequential?
It is. And you know, one of the things I always think of, and again, that's a little mindfulness trick, is instead of saying, sometimes we say to people, oh, you got to let it go. But it's a good chance you can't. But you can let it be.
Yeah.
Right. And so I like to say that instead, because that's a way for us to not feel like we have to give up control. We actually still keep control. And I think we're so often that's part of our anxiety, is that we feel we're out of control. Or fear is we don't feel that we have control over something. And this idea that we can let it be, we can always pick it up later, that allows us to be back in the driver's seat of our mindset, for that matter.
Yeah, I love this. And I'm curious specifically how this plays into your work with executives and leadership coaching. So two interests that you and I share are leadership and self-care. In fact, I write a post every year called My Three Words that I don't know if you've seen other people in our circle write this post, but it's something that Chris Brogan started back in, I don't remember, 2011, 2008. And every year at the beginning of the year, instead of making resolutions, you pick kind of these themes. And my three words this year are leader, helpful, and the third one being self-care. Because for a very long time, I didn't pay very much attention to that. I was an entrepreneur and running my own agency for a while, and I didn't put any thought into that. And as I was looking through a lot of your materials, you know, through your different videos and the things you talk about self-care in a way that I think is fairly unique from what I've heard in the past. When I think of self-care, my general understanding of it has been it's sort of like this thing that you do for yourself. It's like you almost like it's this external thing that you, like a gift you buy for yourself, but it's not a physical thing, but it's this thing that you do for yourself. And when you talk about it, almost more like it's a discovery, like something that you're finding that's already there. And you tie it very closely, not just in the mindfulness, but also in how you feed yourself and nourish your mind, body, and spirit, I guess. Talk to me a little bit about your philosophy of self-care. What does that even mean? And what are the components of it?
Yes, I think of self-care as the foundation for getting what we want in life and for performing at our best. And what I've seen through the years of coaching leaders is that they're burning out. They're not functioning optimally. They have, they're becoming bad bosses because they're not communicating well. They're irritable, angry, short-tempered, or they're not innovative anymore. They lost their creative. They lost their lust for their company. If it's an entrepreneur, often I see they're wondering if they should just give up. And it's not really because the business isn't great. It's because they're not feeling great. And part of that is that we think of self-care as what we do to recover after a long day. And unfortunately for most people, that ends up being a little extra food and an extra drink instead. So it's like more of a treat, where I look at self-care as a super foundational relationship with the routines and the habits and the framework we have every single day for just being able to be at our best. And this idea that we think of it as, I think of self-care as self-awareness, self-connection, self-awareness, self-responsibility, and self-expression. And how that then superimposes on the culture is that care in the culture is community, acknowledgement, respect, and empathy. So now all of a sudden we have a completely different relationship because it's about how we relate. And self-care is the foundation for all of that. And actually, that's where the Buddhism comes back into it, or the mindfulness comes back into it, because there we always talk about how everything stems from a relationship we have with ourselves. That's how we show up in the world. It's how we interact with other people. And it's very tied into our, not only our sense of self, our self-esteem, but also our purpose.
So you've been doing this for a little while at this point, with what, 15 years?
Yes.
Yeah. Where do you typically see the blind spots when you're working with leaders? You know, I as part of my role, I'm a leader in my company, and I deal with a lot of social media content marketing and kind of very tangible hard skill stuff in marketing. But I aspire to get a lot more into leadership and company culture building, because it's really where my passion is and something that I spend a lot of my free time studying. I'm curious, in the work that you've done, if there's been a particular blind spot that you've noticed come up kind of time and time again. You mentioned burnout. I would consider that to be a pretty straightforward and common one, that, you know, we have this culture, not just that, you know, it's probably not just like an innate thing, but it's more like the culture that we live in really values and talks about burning the midnight oil and all that. So it's understandable why people can get wrapped up there. Another topic that's come up with some of my other guests and conversations I've had is about empathy and how we're not focusing enough on that. In your experience, is there any one place that you've typically found it's most effective to start or assess before trying to figure out where to go in building that culture of self-care, both for yourself as a leader, but also for your organization?
Yes, very much so. I think part of the blind spot is a lot of people think of self-care, the analogy with the car, right? They're saying, well, you have to fuel up the car. And I'm like, so you have to fuel up your body. And I think that because we actually don't, we can actually run on empty. That's our blind spot. We're designed to be able to survive on pretty much nothing. And so we do that every day. And so this idea that because we still have energy, because we still function, because we still can, we think we haven't pushed the limit yet. And so it's interesting for me, because what I see all the time is that, you know, you're looking at what's your latest technology that makes you work faster?
Obviously the smartphone, right? It's there. It's all the time in my pocket.
Right. And how do you get around town?
Usually walking or Uber.
Right. And I actually asked the question a little bit wrong, because I shouldn't have said the word technology. But the reality is that the best hack you have is your brain. And the way you get around town is your body.
Fair points.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we forget, that is the most essential tool we have. That is the best hack we have, is to figure out how we perform at our best, how we work optimally as human beings. And we cannot do that without self-care. There's just no way. And that's the blind spot. We think it's outside of ourselves, but it's not. It's inside.
It's so interesting that we all have the same, call it technology. But we have a mind, a body. We have our mental health, physical health, emotional health. We have all these the same components. And so often we're ignoring those components and looking externally for something else. And I've kind of heard you say that a lot in different things, is that it's kind of already inside of you.
It's already here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reality is, we're not doing anything if we don't have this body.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk to you a little bit about the impact of external technologies and how those can sometimes distract us from this kind of internal examination and getting closer to ourselves. We have these devices that, you know, we have in our hands at all times. There's the internet, there's all sorts of things that are constantly coming about. I'm curious, before we get to that, what's a technology that in your life you've seen profoundly change the direction of your life or change how your life is going positively? You know, what's something that you have seen that's moving you forward in the right direction, that's not like the technology you're born with?
I'm basic and simple in that way. It's the fact that I can answer email wherever I am. I used to, like, early on when we were able to tap into that, I would go sailing and answer email. And that to me is just, that changed my life. The fact that I can bring my office with me, because it gave me the opportunity to explore something at the same time as I was taking care of what I needed to take care of. And people would say to me, why do you never take time off? And I'd be like, well, what does time off have to look like? Right. And it's this idea that I'm in charge because I decide when I want to check my email or do my text messages and things like that. So that kind of technology to me has been life-changing in the way I work and for a long time. I will say I'm really curious about AI and how it can help us look inside ourselves, how it can help us test us or what it can do for us. Because, like, for me, for example, the fact now that we're testing DNA is or testing our genes is a huge change in what I know about myself that I could never know before. So those things can really help us tailor our self-care and tailor some of the things that we need to know about ourselves, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you that both of those are fascinating. And I think relative to the two examples you just gave, I kind of want to turn it around and throw it back at you again and get your take on this, because you just mentioned two things that from a different perspective are actually profoundly terrifying or potentially very, very negative. So email and mobility and being able to work from anywhere is also the reason why people are bringing their work home with them. Obviously exceptionally beneficial, or we could have, you know, Skynet and the Terminator and human beings must be eradicated. So obviously, I think with everything in technology, it's not far out to say that there's two sides to it. How do you, because you spoke about both of these things very positively, and you also work with people who probably one of their points of burnout is not being able to disconnect. What's the sort of mindset that you can install for listeners who may be struggling with finding that balance to better get a sense of getting control over that technology rather than letting that technology control them?
Right. And I do think that it's very true. It's very much of a challenge to have that boundary. And again, that's back to the self-care. It's knowing when you just need to put it down and do something else. Granted, we also use the technology for all the other things that we would normally use a newspaper for or a book or something like that, that still becomes the gadget in front of our face. So there is that. It's a very fine balance between knowing what is it you're paying attention to right now and what is it that you're actually, what's the purpose of your walk, for example? Is it to just air out your head and not think about anything? Yeah, that's a good idea to leave your thing behind. I take mine with me because I love to take photographs. So I go around and I look for little things and I bring my phone with me because I take photographs. So it's this idea of how we use it more so than that we use it, and really learning ourselves to keep more of a, I would almost call it a happiness thermometer on it. Like, does this gadget control you or do you control it? Right. And how do we get to that place? And I think it's a challenge for sure. Right? But it's one of those, we're not going to live without it. So we need to learn how to live with it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. So your work is so steeped in who we are and how we live, how we work. It's this very, to a certain extent, for lack of a better term, it's very organic. Like, who are we in this world, right? And after listening to some of your story, your kind of prior life, your prior career, before finding out about the if not if but when, I'm curious, because so much of your story relies on the big change in your life. Because it seems like you almost have two different careers that you could talk about. There was the pre that moment and post that moment.
Yeah.
I want to know what the big lesson you wish you learned earlier in your career is. Mm-hmm. And the question is, was it the moment that you decided you needed to take better care of yourself and learn more about yourself? Do you wish you learned that earlier, or is there something else that may have come after that point that you wish you learned earlier, or maybe something that came in your initial career that you thought, you know what, maybe if I had learned that earlier? What's something that throughout your career, you've had this interesting life, what's the thing that you wish that you learned earlier?
I do actually wish I'd learned earlier to take better care of myself. I burned out when I was 26. They thought I had an ulcer already. It wasn't because I was working too hard, as in burning myself out from work, because I had a lot of fun. I love my job. It was basically because I didn't take care of myself. I just wasn't eating well. There was no way I would have wanted to work less hours because I had so much fun and it was so challenging and amazing. And that was in the fashion industry, and that was back in Denmark. And then the other moment was when I was working in the fashion industry in New York and also was on the edge of burning out, not loving my job as much, but still really pursuing it. And also then getting that message that that my mother, like I was calling my mother that afternoon to find out when my dad would be arriving. And I was in a situation where I had both my parents in cancer therapy in two different countries. And it was not easy. And I wasn't able to, my mother couldn't breathe properly. She was whispering. She said, I have to go to the hospital. And I said to her, Mom, you got to get in an ambulance. You can barely speak. And she said, okay. And she put down the phone. And I wanted so badly to call her back and say, I love you. And I didn't, I couldn't. And it was not in our nature to do that. We never told each other that. It may be part of our family culture or our Danish culture at the time. I couldn't call her back and I never got the chance. And she died in the ambulance. And I then had to sit my dad down when he arrived that evening and tell him that she was gone. And I think it's the most difficult day I've ever had in my life. Absolutely. And I got a phone call from somebody in France that I was trying to create a deal with, based with the designer that I was working for at the time. And I actually picked up the phone, and his human response to what I told him, I said, I'll take care of this tomorrow. I can't right now. My mother just died. He was just like, I can't believe he even picked up the phone. And it was this idea that I, in that moment, realized that I had some really wrong priorities in the name of duty. And the company fired me after that. So, because now I had to take care of my dad. So all of this just showed me that I will never again give myself completely to a company if it doesn't serve me. And that's one of the reasons why culture is so important for me today. Because too many people give themselves to the company without asking for anything in return, in terms of being acknowledged as the human beings that they are, in terms of being seen, in terms of feeling that they matter. And this idea that we're just disposable, I think we have to completely rethink that.
That is absolutely heartbreaking.
It was very difficult at the time, but it's also turned my life around in a way that has made me really revisit how I live my life and how I help other people. And that's one of the reasons why self-care is so important to me, because that is how we stand up for ourselves. And that is how we walk in and say, like my boss would usually say to me, you don't have to eat lunch because I don't have to. And my answer would be, you don't want me on your hands if I don't eat lunch. I'm hypoglycemic. I get really hangry. But now it would be a completely different response. It would be, no, I am eating lunch.
Yeah. My wife oftentimes will not eat lunch during work. And sometimes when we were leading up to the wedding, we were actually doing that on purpose. We were doing intermittent fasting, kind of get into wedding weight and everything. I'm curious your take on fasting in general, because I've heard you talk about, you know, people skipping meals and not skipping meals and, you know, nourishing yourself and all of them. I'm just curious your kind of quick take on fasting and what you think about that movement.
Yeah, I think we should fast between meals, but we need to each find out how many hours that is. I can go 5 to 6 hours between meals without feeling like I'm pushing myself into survival mode. Mm-hmm. If we do it as a chronic thing that we'd never eat all day long and end up with a big meal at night, there's nothing healthy about that, because we don't need all that fuel at night. It just gives us bad sleep and, you know, whatever else it gives us, too much weight on our belly, maybe too. So I think it's this idea of this constant snacking that we do. Like, there was such a big movement for gracing, but the gracing that we do in the office today is mostly M&Ms instead of berries and nuts and seeds. Yeah. So I think that, you know, the gracing was good, but you have to remember that when we were gracing, we were nomads and we were on survival mode most of the time. And then we would kill something and we would binge. And then we would, so this idea that we should eat smaller meals, yes. And I think we need big enough meals that we feel fully satisfied, and so that we can have extensive amount of time between the meals where we don't have to worry about food, because there's nothing more distracting than being hungry.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Or sleepy.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. So we each have to find our way of looking at it. Personally, fasting more than between meals doesn't work for me. Some people are better at doing something like that, and that can maybe work, but I don't think it should be a chronic situation, because we don't have to give ourselves the time at work. Like, we shouldn't use it for that.
Yeah. No. Okay. All right. Good. That, I think that's kind of what I would expect you would have said. I'm glad to hear it. If you were like fasting bad, I would have been like, darn it, I've been doing that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the thing about fasting is it lowers our insulin levels, and we learn how to use our stored energy. And so low insulin levels is one of the ways that we maintain our health. So I think it is important that we don't stuff ourselves all the time. And that's one of the reasons why I think the snacking has gotten out of hand, because most of what we snack on is not food. It's some kind of bar. And most of the bars are full of sugar.
Yeah. I love in your talk, you gave the line about like most of our food comes from this kind of a plant, not that kind of plant. I think that's amazing. Well, I think your story is obviously an exceptionally interesting one. It's touching. The last part was a little bit heartbreaking. But I appreciate you coming on and talking about some of those things. I want to take us to a couple rapid fire questions so you can share some things that from your experience you think other people should know about. This is a section I call shareables. So I'm going to run you through them real quick. These are rapid fire. So really first things that come to your mind. First one is, what is one book every person should read?
Oh, wow. I think every person should read Phil Jones's book, Exactly What to Say, because it really helps us to look differently at how we use our words.
100%. I totally endorse that decision. It's a great book. What is your favorite podcast? And you can't say shareable no matter how much you want to.
The Learning Leader with Ryan Hawk. I really like it. It has some great conversations with leaders that I learned something from.
All right, cool. You mentioned that you're not a big app person, but I'm sure you have a smartphone and I'm sure you use a computer. So what's one mobile or desktop application do you think everybody should go and download and give a try?
I do use tons of apps. I'm just not up on the newest one. I love Evernote because it helps me sort everything.
It's so funny. I've been toying whether or not I should have a no Evernote rule on that one, because it's such a good answer. I can't live without Evernote. I personally, so I'm going to throw one more in there on that. Just my own tip to you. If you like Evernote, you should look at an app called Drafts. 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 It's an iOS app. I don't think they make it for Android, but you can, dictate and it'll live transcribe your words. Super helpful if you're trying to like write a book or do anything like that.
Well, I can add another one too then for people who do this. Mind Meister. It is.
It's a mind mapping app, right?
Yeah, it's a mind mapping app, and I use it for when I do a talk or any kind of thing. I map it out beforehand. It's a great way to have an overview and feel creative at the same time.
Love it, love it. What is the most important skill of the future?
To know yourself.
Love it. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Magic.
What does that mean? Define magic for me. I'm a huge comic book geek, so I love this question.
Yeah. I've always wanted to be able, as I said, I'm a fixer by nature. I've always wanted to help people, and I wish I could take their pain away in a flash, but I also know that they will learn from going through it on their own.
Got it. So you would be like a Doctor Strange type that you had different spells that could do different things. All right, cool. Final question. This is the big one. So you can take a second to think about it if you want, because this one I think is the most important one. But what is one thing that everybody listening in this episode should go and do today? That's the important part. They have to go and do it today.
Tell their body that they need it and they appreciate it and thank you for all the hard work it does. And actually do it every day.
Yeah. A moment of gratitude for your body. It's wonderful. Jeanette, you've been a wonderful guest. I want to give you a moment to just tell people where they can go and be social with you, learn about the work that you do, watch your TED Talks, get involved with anything that you're working on. Now's your chance to tell whatever you want. The show is yours. Go for it.
Thank you so much. My blog, where you can find a lot of resources, is pathforlife.com. And you can also sign up right now for a 27-day free habit-changing daily email thing that I'm sending out. And if you want to learn more about coaching, consulting, speaking engagements, and my sort of more business work, it is JeanetteBrunet.com.
Awesome. And I will put all of those in the show notes so that people can go directly to it. I appreciate you coming on. For all of you listening, please, for the love of God, go check it out. Jeanette, you're one of the most genuine and authentic people that I have had the opportunity to talk to. And that's not to say anything about the other people, but just your commitment to what you do and the impact making on people's lives. It is noble. It is appreciated. So thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
This episode has been great. And I think people should tell somebody else about it after they listen to it, which I think would categorize this episode as shareable.
Wait, the show's not over yet. I have some important announcements. If you made it this far, you're clearly a dedicated fan, or you're in the middle of vacuuming and just haven't hit stop on your podcasting app. Whatever the case, we want to thank you. We're not just music to your ears, we're music to your inbox. If you subscribe to our email list at shareablepodcast.com/subscribe, not only will you get access to our private Facebook group, you'll also get all of our blog posts, newsletters, special announcements, and more. You won't find any of that in your podcast feed. You can follow the show at shareable_pod on Twitter and just shareable podcast on everything else. You can find Jeff online at jeffgibber.com, and you can connect with me on Twitter at Caroline Sohn, because I don't have a website yet. So go ahead, call us, leave a message, subscribe to our list, leave a rating, review us on iTunes, tell a friend, tell your mom. If she's like my mom, she'll love it. And now for the thank you portion to all the folks that make this podcast possible. Shout out to DJ Quads for the use of our theme song, Always, and Ahimitsu for the use of our outro song, Adventures. And a big thank you to Ray Bueno for all of that sexy production value.